Good evening, everybody. It is an honor to be here at my last, and perhaps the last, White House Correspondents' Day. You all look great. The end of the Republic has never looked better.
It has been blown up many times in films, be it by aliens or terrorists. We see it almost daily in the news. Of course, I'm talking about the White House. Next to the Eiffel Tower and the pyramids, it's one of the most famous buildings in the world. Everyone knows what it looks like. A villa with a neoclassical columned front, two wide wings, flag on top, and of course a gleaming white facade. There, Pennsylvania Avenue, big decisions are made that affect the whole world. It's hard to imagine the sitting president residing anywhere else. But that is exactly what almost happened several times in history. In 1789, George Washington had just been elected the first president of the still young United States. There was no permanent residence at that time. Instead, Washington resided in three different houses at intervals of a few months. Namely, the Samuel Osgood and Alexander Macomb House in New York. Then in a three-story townhouse in Philadelphia, which had previously been occupied by the politician Robert Morris. It was at this time that the already long-debated planning of a real and representative capital began. The Federal City, today's Washington, D.C. Washington himself had chosen the location in the swampland on the Potomac River. In the transitional period until 1800, Philadelphia was to be the state capital. However, the government of New York City had already begun building a nice house for the president at that time. The city fathers hoped that Washington would perhaps feel more at home in today's Big Apple. The so-called Government House, which was completed in May 1790 at the southern tip of Manhattan, was somewhat reminiscent of a Georgian-style courthouse with its columns and pointed gable. It was never occupied, at least not by the president. Instead, it served for a time as a customs house. Later, it was used by the Academy of Arts for courses. In 1815, the building was demolished and the land sold. Today, on the site sits the Alexander Hamilton Custom House, which handled customs work for the Port of New York. Philadelphia's local government also got its hopes up that it would not remain just a temporary solution. They built a box-shaped brick building with high windows, steep stairs, and a large roof terrace not far from Morris House. This too was never to be entered by a president. However, it served as a university building for almost 40 years. In 1829, however, it was then demolished in favor of a campus. During all this, the French architect Pierre-Charles L'Enfant planned and constructed the future capital. In the center, the seat of the president. A competition was held to decide what it should look like. A total of 9 proposals were submitted. One of which came from Thomas Jefferson, albeit anonymously. In July 1792, the choice fell on the submission of a certain James Hoban. His inspiration? The seat of the Irish Parliament. He envisioned a small but chic mansion, adorned on either side with a columned arcade. Washington himself still advised changes. Above all, he wanted the house to be larger, more monumental and ornate, and got his way. Nevertheless, the building remained comparatively modest. The city planner L'Enfant had included space for a building more than 5 times as large. Work on this building began in 1792 and lasted almost 8 years. At the end of this time, the entire building was given its white color with a mixture of lime and rice glue. Washington himself did not move in. It was his successor in office, John Adams, who did so on the 1st of November 1800. Only a few years later, during the British-American War, the White House was set on fire. At times it was considered that the entire building should be demolished, but in 1819, the decision was made to rebuild the building, including the large columns at the front. Then came the American Civil War. During 1861 and 1865, and in the period after, the government grew rapidly. Soon the White House was quite crowded. There was a lack of offices and conference rooms. In addition, it was now in real need of renovation. Repairs and painting work had to be carried out constantly. In 1891, the architect Frederick D. Owen, together with the then First Lady Caroline Harrison, submitted plans for a comprehensive extension of the White House. He wanted to simply add 90-degree rotated replicas of the main building to the left and right wings, creating a U-shaped structure with space for offices and a large art gallery. There was also to be a large courtyard. The end of this was to be completed with a noble botanical garden in the style of a British greenhouse. However, as Owen noted, it would be no problem to abandon the old building and simply realize his plan in a new location. In fact, the drawings look quite fascinating and not even that unrealistic. However, they were rejected. Others openly advocated abandoning the White House. Chief them was urban developer Mary Foote Henderson. In her view, the White House was beautiful but impractical. Around 1898, she planned a new one. Henderson's design, which she commissioned from the architect Paul J. Peltz, was colossal. The so-called Executive Mansion was to be built on Medidian Hill. The Vittoriano in Rome was probably one of the inspirations. The five-story building was to be characterized by columns, arches, wide staircases, and ornaments in the style of neo-Baroque and neo-Renaissance. The representative main building alone was to be twice as wide as the White House. In addition to workrooms, the building was planned to provide several galleries, meeting rooms, and guest quarters. To prevent the palace from sinking into the ground, the entire hill would have had to be reinforced with concrete and stone. Too big, too expensive. There are enough reasons why the mansion was not realized. But maybe it was because neither President McKinley nor Roosevelt wanted Mary Henderson as a neighbor. Her estate would have been directly across the street. In 1911, the idea arose that one White House would not be enough. The businessman John Brisbane Walker had once become rich through land speculation. As a reward for himself, he had a castle built on Mount Falcon. The medieval structure had impressed him so much that he wanted to have another estate built there. Walker commissioned the architect Jacques Benedict to plan a second castle not far from the first one. The architect conceived a monumental stone building. It was to span a wooded hill on a rocky plateau which runs into a steep face. The walls were to rise dozens of meters into the air, adorned by towers and balconies. Walker wanted to give this building to the presidents as a summer residence, or as some newspapers wrote, a White House West. Walker did not want to finance the building all by himself and called for a fundraising campaign, and he found donors. Therefore, a foundation stone was laid in 1911, and construction of the A corner pillar began. But then came the First World War. Donations dried up, Walker's wife died, and he lost interest in the project. The ruins of the castle still stand today, as does a commemorative plaque, Summer Home for the Presidents of the United States, Gift from the People of Colorado, 1911. Thank you for listening to the first English episode of Great Things Never Made. The podcast was originally created in German. Now, thanks to artificial intelligence, it is also available in English. Yes, the speaker is an artificial intelligence, and I think she's doing a pretty good job. Well then, until the next episode, have a good time.